This is the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, bringing you the info you need to make your next move a great one.
Cool. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Chester County Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Dominski, and this is the show that gives you the information that you need to make your next move a great one. Today, I'm sitting down with John Wright from the Wright Agency. We're going to talk a little bit about insurance. John, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks a lot, Sean. It's typically not the most the most exciting and exhilarating topic. However, you know, based on what we were talking about before this,
right.
Everybody needs it, and it's a critical part of every real estate deal. So everything that we do, like you were saying earlier, is got a little bit of insurance connected to it.
Yeah. So what I was saying earlier was basically, you know, nothing in the world gets done without insurance. Yep. And when we have these conversations, and it just sounds like we're talking about, like, it's like a necessary evil. You need it to get a mortgage or to drive on the roads. But in reality, it's how our society functions. It's behind every function of our society. You know, you wouldn't be able to get in the car to come here today. We wouldn't be able to sit here with this equipment or in this building if it wasn't for insurance at some point down the road. Just that, you know, if you don't have anything to mitigate the risk would be way too much for us to, you know, actually be able to do anything. So I always preference that when we talk about insurance, because, you know, when you come from that standpoint, now that we're talking about homeowners insurance, which can be kind of a drag, kind of like a necessary evil, it's like, well, don't forget, this is what's allowing you to get the mortgage. This allows you to live in the house that someone else built. It allows you to have other people over to your house. It's really everything.
It is. It's a tool. And, you know, you mentioned mortgages.
Yeah.
Mortgages are an awesome tool, because in order to buy, you know, a $300,000-$500,000 house without a mortgage, you're saving up every penny. And that's going to take you a long time. Might take you 20 years or more to save up that much money, if you ever get that much. So a mortgage is a great way to sort of, you know, get the house in a timely manner and then pay it off on the back end. As we all know, homeowners insurance, kind of similar,
right?
Because, you know, when you make a big financial decision and a big financial purchase, you know, imagine buying a, you know, $300,000-$500,000 house and self-insuring. And what I mean when I say self-insuring is you don't have an insurance policy. You just rely on your money you have in the bank to fix a problem should it happen. And that sounds easy if it's a small problem, like a leaky window or, you know, something of that nature. But what if you have a fire and, you know, 2/3 of your house have been destroyed? Well, when you get that bill from the restoration company for, you know, $375,000, that's going to end you financially. And most people don't have a spare $375,000 sitting in their bank account.
Right.
So that's where the beauty of insurance comes in for a homeowner. And, you know, obviously lots of other reasons as well. But in that example, you know, paired with a mortgage, those two tools allow us all to purchase and own homes.
Right.
You know?
Well, and I know you're, I mean, we're, you know, just in the general conversation of insurance, we're not necessarily talking about what you do, but, you know, the other thing is when you're borrowing money, there has to be some sort of form of collateral.
Sure.
If there's not, then you're just, you're an idiot. So I, you know, I talk to people, I had a friend who lost a whole bunch of money in some crypto stuff with like the FTX stuff. And when we looked at it, it was like, dude, you let him borrow, you basically let someone borrow your money without receiving any collateral for it. When you do the same thing when you put your money in a bank, you're letting the bank borrow your money, but they're not giving you collateral. But what they have instead is FDIC, which is insurance. So another way, another important function of insurance is that if there's no collateral involved, you can, you know, insurance replaces collateral. So when you're borrowing money for a mortgage, yes, that house is collateral, but the insurance protects that house if something happens, which is why I always bring it back to the mortgage company. We were just talking a little bit earlier about replacement cost and what's necessary and stuff. And to a large degree, you were saying that the insurance company has certain requirements, but I'm pretty sure most of the requirements comes back to what the mortgage company requires to protect the collateral for the money that they gave you. So it is kind of intertwined and from like a big picture view. And most people don't really think about that. They're like, oh, I need homeowners insurance. Well, I don't know if you do if you own the house outright, but if you have a mortgage on the property, then yes, you do need it. It's a requirement from the from the mortgage company. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, I mean, everybody with a mortgage needs homeowners insurance. Yeah. Bottom line, it's a requirement of your mortgage, and most people have mortgages, so therefore homeowners insurance is required for most homeowners. As far as the replacement cost goes, you know, all mortgage companies will want to see some more strict than others, as we know, but all mortgage companies are going to want to see that loan amount covered by some insurance. And you know, even if it's $1 million house, but you have borrowed $100,000, you know, which would probably be an unlikely scenario, but just for an example, then you better have at least $100,000 of insurance there. You know, they don't necessarily care about the whole house. They care about their piece. You know what I mean? So
it's not unlikely if you're talking about like a home equity loan or a refinance or something like that.
Exactly.
Now, so a little bit about yourself. You've been, I feel like we've met years ago, but you were already in the business for 10 years after that or before that. How did you get into insurance?
Yeah, so I've been in insurance now for over 17 years, and it feels like longer than that because it was a family business. So, you know, I was helping out around the family business when I was 5 years old, right? So for decades, I've been in and around the Wright agency, which is my family business. I was fortunate enough to purchase it from my parents about 7 or 8 years ago and, you know, officially take over and send mom and dad out to pasture. But, you know, no, it was a family business. And the interesting story is the Wright agency is, you know, the name of the business, and it's been in Downingtown since 1977. So been around for a little bit, but that a lot of people know what it is in this area. But what a lot of people don't know is the Wright agency was actually started, with some books of business combined from smaller little insurance agencies. And one of those little insurance agencies was run by my grandmom out of her home in Coatesville. And that book of business was started by her father years prior out of his house. He was a farmer. His name was Thomas Hope. Thomas Hope started an insurance business. He passed it to his daughter, who's my grandmother on my mom's side. And then that original book of clients, along with a couple others, was used to create the Wright agency in 1977. So if you really want to get technical and make the story more dramatic, fourth generation insurance agent.
Fourth generation.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. So it hasn't been called the Wright agency the whole time, but you know, it's been that for the last two generations and hopefully for many more.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, not crazy. That's awesome.
It is.
And then you think about like, I mean, I'm sure you've seen policies all over the place, but like, imagine, you know, you're like, you're looking at like an old, like picture, a 50 year old picture of the area. And it's like, oh, that building right there was being insured by your grandmother or her father.
The cool thing is we kept a lot of those old paper files and still do use them to today to talk when we speak to like someone's family. And I'll speak to the grandson or the great grandson of different properties and buildings and farms and different places in the county. And show them and say, hey, look, here's how much history we have with your family and with you know, the insurance on this property. And that means a lot, you know, especially today with the growth in this area is just crazy, man. People coming from everywhere, and you know more about it than me in your industry, but you know, it's just nice for sometimes people that have been around for a while in this area to sort of see some of that history and, you know, makes them feel good.
Yeah. I mean, at first it seemed like the growth was really slow. Like, I've lived in Downingtown. I grew up in Westchester, so kind of in the area. But when I moved to Downingtown, there wasn't a lot going on. Then all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's just like, boom, like every, you know, apartments going up and this and that. And then Exton, like you blink and that completely changes.
Completely changed.
I was just talking to someone from, talking about some stuff in Westchester, and we couldn't even use the same landmarks because I was like, oh, what about this coffee shop or that restaurant? And they're like, where's that? I'm like, oh, I guess it's been a while since there's been a Starbucks in the middle of town or something like that.
Right.
But it's, I enjoy it. I love it.
I think it's great.
I like the development. I know people have mixed feelings on different things individually, separately. But you've been in the area then your whole life.
I've been here my whole life, right? So I grew up in Downingtown. I went to Downingtown schools, graduated from Downingtown High School before it split. Right. Mm-hmm. So sort of OG D-Town. And then I still live here. I work here. My kids now will go to Downingtown schools. And so I've seen it change. I've seen a lot of it change. I've seen a lot of it stay the same. And that's a cool thing about a town. And that's, that's sort of like, you know, some places have changed and lost their identity. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think, extremely biased, by the way, but I'd like to think that Downingtown has done a decent job of maintaining some of its identity while still growing. And yeah, I think that's a cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good for some places to keep their identity, and then other places like
might need a little change, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think of like growing up in Westchester, Exton to me was always shopping centers and a mall. Mm-hmm. So if it becomes more shopping centers with more, you know, better restaurants, better, like, I'm okay with that area being developed. I hope no one from Exton is like super like, no, we need our village back.
I think they
get it. Yeah, it's just one of those things. But then you talk about something like Marshallton Village, and it's like, yeah, I want that to be locked in time.
Agree. Yeah, those are good examples, right? I mean, they're on both ends of the spectrum.
Exactly. So let's go back to like the people who are buying houses, because that's usually the only time, unfortunately, you look at your homeowner's policy and kind of reevaluate stuff. What's some of the advice that you give people when they're evaluating homeowner's policies? Because a lot of times it's just they comes down to price. Is there something more that they should be thinking about, or anything that they should be considering? And then what about like riders? And at what point do you start looking at going above your homeowner's a policy and insuring valuables and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, two good questions, obviously. First part can be tricky. Yeah. And I think that it's a case by case basis. And, you know, shameless plug, but, you know, get a good agent to help you. Mm-hmm. And I know when you're buying a house, it's a frantic, sometimes overwhelming experience. And you've got a real estate agent, you've got a mortgage person, you might have a home inspector and other people involved in your life, like advising you and helping you. And maybe you feel like the last thing that you want is one more person in the mix.
Right.
And I get that. And I totally get it. But try to get a good agent on your side, local agent, somebody that can really help you out and has been there before a bunch of times. So that would be the first thing. The second thing is, don't feel like you need to nail it all the first time, and don't feel like you need to nail it for your closing. You've got so many other things that I would consider, like, you know, connected to the mortgage and the property itself, that are more like set in stone type of stuff. A homeowner's policy, contrary to what a lot of people think, it doesn't have to be done and nailed and set in stone at that time. Get a good policy in place, fill all the requirements that you need, and get your closing, get your settlement done, buy your new house. Right. And if you've got a good relationship with an agent, I do it all the time, Sean. I'll tell the person, listen, I know you're overwhelmed. I know money's flying out the door. Let's follow up with each other in 90 days. Mm-hmm. I'll check in, see how you're doing. And then we'll follow up again in another 90 days. And what we'll do is we'll sit down at that point, the dust will have settled, the boxes will be unpacked. Mm-hmm. And let's take a look at your homeowner's insurance, because it's more than just a line item on your closing sheet. It's an important document, and it's an important thing to have now that you're a homeowner. It's the largest thing you'll ever buy in your whole life for most people. And let's dial this in. And what a lot of people don't know, and this doesn't just go for first-time home buyers or someone buying a house. This goes for anybody. You might have lived in your house for 20 years, and this is an important thing to remember. The difference between really cheap insurance and really good insurance is usually not as much money as you think. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? The gap and the spread between those two is usually not that much. And and what I mean by that is I'll just use round numbers so the math is easy. You know, a really, really cheap insurance policy, let's say, is $500 a year, right? Mm-hmm. Just bottom of the line, got me out the door, and I got the policy, and I did my thing. A really great insurance policy isn't necessarily going to be five times that. It's not going to be $2,000. It's not going to be $2,500. It's not going to be like a prohibitive amount of money for most of us. You could probably dial that policy up and get amazing insurance for maybe $800 or $900, right? And so in the grand scheme of things, you know, a couple hundred dollars more on the largest thing you've ever bought, right, is actually a really smart move. And a lot of people don't think that. They just think like, oh my gosh, I don't want to go to that next level because that's going to be really expensive. And usually the difference between, you know, the insurance that you have and the insurance that you should have is not as expensive as you think. So that's something that I always try to remind people, you know. And usually when people see the numbers and I put the quote together, they're like, oh, not as much as I thought it was going to be, you know? Yeah. So that's sort of a refreshing thing to think about. So I think that's the, to answer your first question, that would be something, you know, just know that you don't need to nail it.
What are some of the factors that go into cheap versus, you know, not as good versus good or cheap versus good? Is it just how much you're covered by, or is it a matter of service or?
So without going too deep into the weeds, which nobody wants to do because everybody will fall asleep watching your podcast here, listening. But I think there's a lot of stuff that's behind the scenes that people don't check on that factors into, you know, the quality of an insurance policy. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by behind the scenes is everybody always looks at the first page, the declarations page or the summary page, and everybody buzzes down the first, you know, three, four, five main coverage pieces of a policy. And then where do they go next? Right to the price, right? And then that's usually most people's review of their homeowner's insurance, right? It lasts about 30 seconds. What the interesting part is most people's homeowners policies are 50, 60, 70 pages, right, of documents. And, you know, I'm sure you've read yours cover to cover many times, right?
I mean, only when I want a really good time.
But so the point being there is that's where the differences are made, right? They're not made on the front page always. Yeah, you can buy more coverage. Yeah, you can, you know, crank some of those things up. And those are important. But some of the things, you know, built back in to, you know, to the meat and potatoes, the nuts and bolts of the policy are where, you know, the difference between, you know, to use your term, a cheap policy versus a really good policy. Yeah. That's kind of where the difference is made. And, you know, lots of little tweaks and lots of little things can add up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, and it's... See, I fall guilty where I don't think about this stuff until I'm like sitting here talking to someone and, you know, like, and then things just like flood into my mind. Like, I'm just like, oh shoot, like I've got cameras and they're not in my home. Is that covered under my, like, what if something happened? Like, is that,
that's right.
Is that like the offices or the landlords or my, you know, my homeowner's policy? If I have gear that's in my car and something happens to it, is that my auto policy or is that my homeowner's policy? You know, I think about traveling. Like, what if I travel with an expensive camera and something happens to it? Like, there's traveler's insurance, but does my homeowner's insurance? So it's just like...
Can be overwhelming, right? I mean, there's a lot of things.
Especially when you get really creative of when you're someone who's really good at like getting creative about terrible things happening.
I would be one of those people.
So what happened? Like, let's say you do have valuable items. One thing that happened to me and my wife is that we got homeowners insurance through a website when we got married, got like renter's insurance, and just, you know, we bought our house, just checked the boxes and stuff like that. And then we realized like we're insuring like her engagement ring, which was like the most expensive thing that we owned when we were in our early 20s. And now we're like looking at it. We're like, wait, we have nicer things now.
Time like, to update.
Yeah. And we just never really, it was like 10 years went by and I was like, oh, I don't have any of my camera or my equipment. You know, she has musical instruments. I have musical instruments. And we're just like, at what point do we, like, what do we do about this? And at what point should something be like a valuable item rider type of thing?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, when you should do it is, you know, obviously everybody's different, right? Not everybody's going to remember to do this every 30 days, right? That's a little bit extreme, right? Every year is a good time to take a little inventory. Mm-hmm. You know, every time you do something large in your life, maybe when you refinance, maybe when you move, maybe when you get married or have children, usually like big life events, change jobs, stuff like that, right? Is usually a good time to take some inventory. Those can also be the worst time to do this because you're already busy enough with said thing, right?
Right.
So I like to try to like whenever I touch, you know, have a touch point with a customer, just, you know, check in with people. And, you know, when I have a good relationship with a client, like I try to with everybody, you know, in your example, I would say, hey, Sean, like I know what you're up to on the weekends with your camera gear. I know what you're doing during the week with your podcasts and stuff. Do you have that stuff covered? Like I'll ask the insurance questions. I go there, you know, and, you know, people do need to take that into consideration. Within reason. And what I mean by that is you can get a little carried away. And as my dad used to call it, be insurance poor.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you add on all your guitars, your piano, your golf clubs, your mountain bikes, your camera equipment, all your jewelry, you know, the watch that your grandfather gave you. Next thing you know, you just added $3,250 a year to your insurance bill. Mm-hmm. What? I mean, that's a lot of money, right? And like, let's pump the brakes on that, right? So what I usually tell people is, you know, make a list of the things that are very near and dear to you and mm-hmm. very valuable to you. Everybody's got a different definition of valuable. Mm-hmm. I've got customers that think $500 is a lot of money, and I've got customers that think $25,000 is a lot of money, right? So I can't really make the call. The person needs to make the call based on their financial situation. Mm-hmm. But, you know, find that cutoff point. You know, for some people, it's, you know, anything over $1,000. Mm-hmm. And I would be really, really in a jam if I lost this. I got to put it on my policy. Other people say, listen, anything over $5,000, you know, which means I'm not going to insure every little tambourine and ukulele that I've got in my basement.
Right.
It doesn't make sense. But for those three really nice collector guitars that right. you have that are each valued at, you know, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, put those on.
Yeah.
You know, not the whole collection. Same with jewelry, right? Your wife's got a big box of jewelry up in the bedroom, and maybe there's 40 things in there. And I'm not saying they're not all special in their own way, but maybe pick like the top like 4 or 5 things mm-hmm. that are really the high dollar items that, God forbid, something happened. You'd really be in a jam financially, and mm-hmm. you know, replacing it would be a hard thing for you, right? That's what I try to tell people, because sometimes you get a little bit carried away. And I do have clients. Usually it's retirees with a lot of extra time on their hands that inventory all the stuff in their home, and the premium for their rider is more than their actual homeowner's policy.
Okay.
So wow. it can get out of control. The, you know, yeah. the tail starts to wag the dog, you know? So the point is, the answer to your question is it's different for everybody mm-hmm. and it's a conversation to have with your agent. And it's a trial and error, mm-hmm. you know, get your agent to quote it. I quote it for people all the time. You know, if you want to send me over a list of 20 cameras and related equipment yeah. and say, John, quote it all and send it to me so I can see. And you might get it back and be like, ooh, $4,200 is a lot. I'm just going to take items, you know, 7, 8, and 9.
Right.
And 14 and 15, leave them on. Everything else, take it off. Send me that quote. And then I update, I send it to you, and it's $600. And you go, that's perfect. Like, find your sweet spot.
That makes sense. You know what I mean? With like a camera, like I'd probably be more interested in sharing the lenses, because they retain more value. They're breakable, and they're not going to be as obsolete a couple years from now. Whereas like the bodies and electronics, it's like, well, I'm going to be upgrading every couple of years anyway. Sure. So something like that.
But well, that's you bring up a great point that I was just going to say to sort of finish the thought
yeah.
is when you're doing this type of exercise, I think the other thing to think about is think practically about how you use the items and how those items fit into your life. Because, you know, I know some people that have really nice mountain bikes. These mm-hmm. people don't mountain bike. They sit in the basement, right? There's no risk. Right. For these mountain bikes to be stolen, damaged, or lost. Mm-hmm. Because I know the person and I know that they don't use the mountain bikes. Whereas if you're a really active guy and 2-3 days a week, you're loading up those bikes on the rack and you and your family are going hitting the trails, you're traveling to ride, you know, maybe you're going down to the shore, going down to the Carolinas or somewhere crazy, you know, with some trails and stuff. You've got more risk. So yeah. maybe those warrant the premium versus the guy that just leaves the mountain bikes in the basement all the time.
Right.
Same with jewelry, right? You know, you might have an amazing collection of cufflinks, mm-hmm. but if you never go anywhere that requires you to wear them and they sit in a box in your closet, well, only you know that. I don't mm-hmm. know that. So like, that's something that you have to think about practically. Like, how do these items really get used? And then that sort of can weigh into your situation.
Yeah, that's awesome. Honestly, I think that's pretty helpful right there. Like, I think that's good.
Happy to help.
Yeah. So what's the best way for people to get in touch with you if they want to work with you on any of those topics?
Best way to get in touch with me is probably send me an email, jonathan@rightagencyinsurance.com. Mm-hmm. You can find our website. We have a nice, you know, simple little local insurance agency website. I think that's, you know, clean and effective. You can find us there. Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn.
The website is
the Right Agency Insurance. RightAgency.com.
Okay.
And then, you know, obviously find us on Facebook, Right Agency Insurance Downingtown, and same on Instagram. So we're on all the social channels, trying our best to, you know, populate those, and message me on any of those channels, call into the office, and anybody that you get will be happy to, you know, happy to help you out, and we'll try our best. I mean, it's a tricky subject, but it doesn't have to be.
Awesome. Know? Hey, well, thanks a lot, man. I really appreciate
Sean,
it.
Sean, thanks, man.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Chester County Real Estate Podcast, brought to you by RE/MAX Ace Realty, serving buyers and sellers in the Chester County area. Subscribe for new episodes at acerealtypa.com/podcast. And you can find us on Facebook, YouTube, and wherever podcasts are found.